The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Second day of our intro to meditation class. And are some of you new, didn't come last week? Yes, a few of you? So welcome. I hope that what I say today works as enough as an introduction. And the last week was recorded. We have this website called audiodharma.org. And these intro classes, intro to meditation classes, are found there in the menu, intro to meditation, it says. And you can listen to last week's if you like, or other ones. So people are still coming in a little bit. Does anyone want to ask any questions about last week's instructions, about the meditation practice? Anything you'd like to ask? Yes, please. Maybe it would be helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you. When I practiced before going to sleep, I didn't sleep. And I wondered if that was common or if I should hearken back to the noon coffee or the 4 o'clock two pieces of chocolate.
Did it happen just once, or it happened repeatedly?
Once it happened, I didn't do it at night anymore.
Well, it's hard to attribute it to one thing then, because many factors, you know, could add up. It does happen sometimes that some people find that they have trouble sleeping after when they meditated in the evenings before going to bed. Some people find it makes sleep a lot easier. So it's a matter of experimenting, see what works. And there's a number of reasons why meditation might make sleep more difficult. One is that sometimes meditation is actually refreshing. You get a kind of deep rest. It's kind of refreshing. You get kind of a second wind. Sometimes it's because you get concentrated, and people who get concentrated, what's called a concentration energy that can happen. And that concentration energy can give you a buzz for a little while that keeps you going. And sometimes meditation opens up the unresolved issues of the day. And you kind of hadn't been thinking about anything, but once you kind of got quiet, oh, boom, you know, or the unresolved feelings. And so those get churning and it's hard to go to sleep. On the other hand, meditation can make you relaxed. And so the tension of the day falls away, and so it's easier to fall asleep. Or some of the concerns of the day that are churning, they quiet down. And so I think it's that one of the principles of kind of Buddhism meditation that we teach, or the whole approach to Buddhism, is experimental. And you're supposed to become your own teacher by experimenting, trying different things and seeing what works and what is nice. And so if you find that, not just from one time, but you find repeatedly that you have trouble sleeping after meditating, then don't meditate so close to sleep.
A couple of times when I was meditating, I found as I was coming to the end of the meditation that I just had this strong feeling of I wanted it to be over. I wanted the alarm to ring. And it wasn't that I had anything particular to do, and it didn't happen every time, but it was a very strong feeling when it did happen.
Yeah. Yeah, the mind is tricky. It's like I told last time about the freezer needs to be defrosted now. There's very strong urges that happen in meditation. And meditation, because it involves the mind and the heart, as we quiet down, it touches deep corners, deep understories of our inner life, and it's all kinds of reasons why there might be impatience, there might be strong urges, there might be feeling of resistance, there might be I want to run away. There's all kinds of things that might happen because that understory of our mind, our hearts, is sometimes difficult. Is not used to it. This morning, my wife read to me a John Carroll article that was in the Chronicle today, and maybe we should make too much of it, but it basically said this, that he was at a play in the East Bay in Berkeley, I think, and if someone was doing Shakespeare, Hamlet, a solo performance of Hamlet, it sounded like, and I don't know if it was planned or not planned, maybe it was part of the theater. But as he gave his soliloquy, he talked about Hamlet, to be or not to be or something, the lights in the theater dimmed and dimmed and finally got completely dark. And he just continued with his performance. And suddenly a man in the audience, stood up and screamed and said, "You're being boring, I'm leaving." And Hamlet is great, but you're boring. And he left. And he left. And what John Carroll said was that, at least through my wife, was that John Carroll interpreted meaning the guy was uncomfortable with the darkness, and he didn't know how to be with himself, and so he had this explosive reaction. You're boring in the middle of a theater. So I'm not trying to say this is for you exactly, but we have to be very respectful of these the deeper corners of our mind that sometimes are touched in meditation, and one of the ways that plays out is wanting to be over. And the usual advice in meditation circles, that's the time to stay and see it to the end. Because you want to learn what that's about. You want to learn not to give into those impulses and follow it, kind of stay with it and let it deepen and go deeper and find out what's there. Or go below it into a more peaceful place. So I don't know if that speaks to you, to your thing, but I mean, there's so many people here, so I just want to let you know that it's not uncommon to have that, and it's really useful to hang in there anyway. And sometimes a successful meditation is generally nice and calm and relaxing. Occasionally, a successful period of meditation is only measured by the fact you didn't get up before it was over. It's like the rodeo. there's so much restlessness and so much, you know, and so you can congratulate, wow, I didn't get up. That, I did well. Thank you. Maybe one more?
I want to share a moment of joy brushing my teeth. I don't know, I haven't quite analyzed it to see exactly where it came from, but I do know that kind of normally brushing my teeth, my mind wanders and I don't really think about it. But I kind of made an effort or made a, you know, intentional effort to kind of bring myself back to the brushing my teeth. And kind of just for a few seconds, I felt this kind of ping of joy. And I think it's just because I was kind of noticing what was happening there, and it kind of the sensations and the, you know, the toothpaste and the sound and the brushing action, and I don't know, there was some moment of joy and
beautiful
just noticing what was happening then and there.
Yeah, it's a very common phenomenon for people when my mind is not busy with its agendas, busy with its fears, its worries, its plans, its desires, its whatever it's doing. And really quiets down enough and to really be present for one simple thing, ordinary thing, it's quite common for it to become precious, to become kind of joyful, special, vibrant. And, you know, for people who have a lot of agendas and things to do, they can't imagine what's so, you know, like you're kind of crazy to be enjoying your brushing your teeth. There's important things to do. You know, let's get on with it. But it's some of the deeper, wonderful joys of life come from just learning to settle back and be fully in that moment for that experience. And it's magical what happens. Magic starts to happen in that kind of domain. Life becomes richer. And also, not only does it become richer in how we see it and perceive it, but also what life has to offer becomes a multidimensional. There's an analogy I like to use, is that some person was born into a house that had really heavy curtains and doors that never opened, and the person grew up in this house, and that's all the person knew was the house. However, this house had a 52-inch television and with 5,000 channels. And it was all these, you know, and sometimes they got not so interesting, some of the channels, you just change the channel, and you could always something interesting to watch. And it was it was color and all kinds of wonderful things, and the person grew up that way, and thought that's what life was about, was watching TV. And then one day there was a power outage in town, and there was no TV. So the person finally got curious. What's outside that door? So the person went out the door into the yard, and the first time in life saw the 3D real trees and real grass, and suddenly whirled and felt a breeze against his cheek. And so now there was a three-dimensional world he didn't know existed because the TV was two-dimensional. So so we tend to live, human beings, many times in a two-dimensional world, I call it that, maybe one-dimensional, a virtual reality world, where we live in our thoughts about things, in our fantasies and imaginations about things, which is kind of a virtual reality. And with mindfulness, is really stopping and opening up the doors of perception and being present here. Life becomes three-dimensional, four-dimensional. All these dimensions begin opening up. It's quite interesting. So, brushing your teeth, beautiful. One of the first kind of profound experiences I had it was on a meditation retreat. Came from drinking a cup of tea. It wasn't my teeth, but it was, you know, same general area, you know. Okay. So, thank you. So I would like to give another analogy that as a background for what we're going to do today, the meditation. So, this is something I happened to me many years ago, some 20 years ago or so. I was teaching a meditation retreat for senior meditation students with other teachers. And one of the teachers was a 49er fan. This is when the 49ers were doing really well. And I didn't know really anything about football, but but he was such an enthusiasm, and the important games were happening during that retreat. So we would go into this teacher lounge, and we'd watch the football game. And so imagine these, you know, three, four guys, you know, ordinary guys watching football, right? And but they were meditation teachers. And so during the commercial, one of the teacher had the remote, pushed the remote, and pushed the mute, and then we talked. But then the game started again, and we all stopped talking, and we looked at the game. But the guy with the remote did not unmute it. And I thought, well, you know, the general kind of approach of mindfulness is to be curious. So I said, well, this is curious. This guy teaches mindfulness meditation, how to pay attention. I'm sure he noticed there's no sound. So I think what I'll do is just be curious. What's this like? So then I became curious of watching the game without the sound. And without the sound, I could kind of follow the game. You know, these guys, they stand up and they fall down. They stood up, one of them gets the ball, he's running down the field, you see he's crossing those lines, it's very good, but then someone comes from the side and tackles him, and that's too bad. And that was, you know, you kind of know what's going on. But then, my friend did unmute the sound. And what struck me dramatically was how different it was to watch the game with the sound than without the sound. And one of the primary differences was we had the commentator who was talking us through the game. And he had enthusiasm. Oh my God, he's making it across the 30-yard line, the 20-yard line. You know, he got tackled. And I could feel myself get involved in the game, being carried by this enthusiasm of the sound that went on. But the words of the commentator were not the game. The game I could follow. But I was influenced seeing it through the lens of his excitement. It's like mood music in the movies, right? That there's a beautiful, idyllic, pastoral picture of a nice little path in the woods. It's just beautiful until you hear the ominous music and your hair stands on end because, you know, it was all fine until then. Or canned laughter. It's not funny. So there's these commentary. There's this mood. All kinds of things that we overlay on top of our experience. So we don't see the experience for what it is directly. We see it through the filter of the commentary, of the mood, of, you know, the interpretation that we have of the situation. And this is true in so many areas of our life. It's true when things get uncomfortable. It's true with physical pain. It's true with nice things that are happening. Much of our life has this overlay. And what we're trying to do in mindfulness is cultivate a direct awareness to heighten our capacity to be aware in the moment, to pay attention, without the filter of this commentary that goes on. So we can see the experience directly. So I might sit and meditate and have an itch on my arm. The direct experience would be, there's an itch, and let me be present for the itch. The commentary could be, I wonder if that's cancer. I wonder if I need to go see the doctor. But no, I can't really afford to go to the doctor because I never really figured out how to pay for it. And, you know, I never seem to be able to figure out how to do things. And, you know, I don't really have a good job because of my parents, and they didn't really support me very much growing up, and they didn't believe in me, and I can't really afford, I need any therapy to help with this, but I can't really afford therapy. And I've heard that meditation helps, and maybe I should learn meditation. Oh, wait a minute. I am meditating. And all I had was an itch. So it's very common for us to make stories about what's happening, and then we see the experience through the stories. And so what we try to do in meditation, like there's an itch, just let it be an itch. And don't get swept away by the stories that we have about it. Maybe later, if you need to think about it and think about it seriously because it's an issue, you can. But in meditation, the idea is to learn the capacity to not get caught in the commentary, not get caught in the stories that we have. And so when you're meditating, there's a variety of different commentaries, stories, lines that might come along. Some of them have nothing to do with what's happening now. And so they have to, you know, some other place and time. And the idea is to come here, come here, come here, to be here for this time being, to train the mind to be in the present moment. And that's a training. It takes a while to do that. And as I said last time, don't worry if you can't do it, come into the present moment, because then the task is to notice what makes it difficult. And guess what? Whatever is making it difficult to be present is happening in the present also. So if you're thinking, if what's happening, you're thinking a lot about the future, that's future thinking is happening in the present. So if you can't be in the present because you're thinking a lot about the future, then turn and notice you're thinking about the future, and then you're present. You understand that? Isn't that great? Can't get away from the present. And sometimes the commentary is about what's happening here and now, the itch, or about interpreting or making a story about your breath, or making a story about yourself. I can't do this. Or I'm the best meditator in Redwood City. I hope everybody's noticing. They hope they give medals here at IMC. And so we start making stories about what's going on. Or we're sitting next to someone who seems to be sitting much more still than we are. So, oh no, you know, I hope no one notices. I'm fidgeting a lot. I shouldn't be fidgeting. And we start telling stories about what should or shouldn't be. The idea with mindfulness meditation is to, in a gentle, very forgiving way, just repeatedly come back to the radical simplicity of the moment, just the experience by itself. If you can let go of the commentary, if you can let go of the story, the ideas of what's going on. And if you can't let go of it, that's okay. Maybe you can just not believe it. So you can come back and just stay with what's simple. Stay with the breathing. We just focus on the breath. Stay with the body. Does that make sense? So as you meditate, be on the lookout for commentary. Look out for starting to tell yourself stories about the experiences, what's happening. Be on the lookout, notice if you start making judgments about what's happening. And try to see if you can be really simple with it. It's okay, it's all okay. Just come back. Just start again. Start again. Okay? So with that, as kind of an introduction, we'll do a meditation together. You've already been sitting, you're maybe not used to sitting so much, so if you want to stand and stretch, please do that, and then in a minute or so, we'll do the meditation. So I'll start with a kind of basic guided meditation to getting here and being present and focusing on the breath for a while, and then during that meditation, I'll begin introducing the theme for today, which is the instructions on mindfulness of the body. So this will be the beginning of exploring how to include our physical experience in meditation itself. So taking a comfortable, upright posture, and if you feel, tired or draggy, it might be useful to sit up a little bit straighter than usual. If you find yourself tense and very restless, it might be useful to sit back a little bit and relax. And gently close your eyes. And it's often useful to begin a period of meditation with a little kind of ritual or little kind of procedure that gets you started or warmed up. and get you connected. And it can be as simple as taking a few long, slow, deep breaths. And as you breathe in deeply, to feel your body from the inside, your chest, your rib cage expand. And as you exhale, relax, settle in. Breathing in deeply, letting go as you relax. And that stronger connection to your body is a reminder that for the next period you're going to be here. Here and now, not there and then. With the mind focused in other places, other times. And then let your breathing return to normal. In the meditation that we do, we don't make any special attempt to breathe like yogic breathing. Just let your breath breathe itself. And with an easy breath, it's often useful at the beginning of meditation to scan through your body. Check in with yourself. Check in with your body. And then as you exhale, you can maybe relax some of the obvious holding patterns in your body. Maybe you can soften the muscles of your face. Perhaps soften around your shoulders. And it can be helpful to soften the belly. Let the belly hang forward, down. A startup thing that's nice to do is just take a moment to feel your whole body, whatever kind of way, global way you feel your body sitting here, noticing if you have any commentary about it, and if you do, maybe you can let it go and be simple. Even if it's uncomfortable, just it's okay, be simple and be present for how it is. And then within your body, as part of your body, notice how your body experiences breathing. What parts of your body move as you breathe? What parts of your body have sensations connected to breathing? Usually they arise and pass in a rhythmic way, in the rhythm of breathing. Some people feel breathing in their body more in the movement of their belly. Some people the movement of their chest. Some people, the sensations of the air are going in and out through the nostrils or back down the throat. Some people feel all of those things. And if you don't feel your breathing anywhere at all, you can put your hand on your belly or chest and feel the movement. See if you can get a little sense of the rhythm, the alternating sensations, experience of breathing in and breathing out. And as you breathe, see, especially as you exhale, see if you can let go of your thoughts, your commentary, your ideas, so you can better experience the breathing. What it's like in your body as you breathe, tuning into that. Some people find it helpful to ever so quietly in the mind have a very simple thought that keeps you connected to the breathing rather than have your thinking take you away. And the simple thought is that as you breathe in, say the word in. As you breathe out, say the word out. And those words are a nudge, an encouragement to stay there. Don't wander off in thought. Come back. Be there with the breath. Very gentle, relaxed. Don't try too hard, but don't try too little. And when you notice the mind has drifted off in thought, you don't have to have much commentary about that. Just begin again with your breathing. Now, to shift the focus a little bit, you can shift your attention away from breathing to notice what is the strongest sensation in your body right now. It doesn't have to be that strong. It can be either comfortable or uncomfortable. Whatever it is, notice the strongest sensation and see if you can bring relaxed attention to it without any commentary about it or stories about it. Kind of like you've never felt that kind of experience before, and you're going to let yourself really discover it, feel it for what it is, like for the first time. And not so much that you're watching it from the control tower in the head, but rather that you're kind of resting in it, resting in the strong sensation. And if it goes away while you're focusing on it, then look for the next strongest sensation. And if there are moods, reactions, stories, commentary about it, just if you can let go, then fine. If not, fine. See if you don't see if you can not believe them so much. And very simple, just stay with the simplicity of the direct experience. If you get restless, you can breathe into the experience, breathe with it. Staying a little bit longer, another minute or so. Search around and just stay with whatever is the strongest sensation in your body, or whatever sensations in your body call for your attention. Just let your attention go there and feel it as if it has permission to be there. Your job is simple awareness of it. And now, have your attention go back to your breathing, to the experience of the body breathing. If you'd like to reestablish the connection more fully by taking one deep breath, you can. And then we'll take a couple more minutes here, the last couple of minutes. You can either stay with your breathing, or if there's strong sensations in your body that kind of call for attention, it's easier to stay present if you focus on them, you can do so. And then to end this period of meditation, you can take again some deeper breaths, feel your body from the inside out, feel your body against your cushion or your chair, and then when you're ready, you can open your eyes. In mindfulness meditation or mindfulness practice, the key human capacity that we're tapping into is the capacity to be aware. And it's a very special thing to be aware. And we can be aware in different ways. We can be aware with the commentary overlaying it. We can be aware with moods going through the awareness. As we pay attention, awareness can be contracted and tight. Awareness can be striving and looking forward. Awareness can be pulled back and frightened. Awareness can take on many different flavors. And what we're trying to do, if it's a present at all, sometimes we lose our awareness because we get lost in our thoughts and stories and fantasies and we make. What we're trying to do is discover the richness of this human capacity to be aware and to be able to use it in all the spectrum of our life, so that we have this a clear, attentive way of being present without being caught up in stories and commentary. And it can be applied to many areas of our life. Learn how to be non-reactive and just really see clearly what's there. The word vipassana, the word that we translate nowadays as insight, literally means to see clearly. And so what it means is that mindfulness is something that we learn to apply in all areas of our life. There's nothing in our life which is outside of the field of mindfulness. And we use breath meditation as the center of the meditation to help calm us down, get connected, to strengthen our mindfulness, develop some focus, help us let go. But only so far. At some point, what we want to do is to learn to pay attention to other areas of our life as well. And when you're sitting in meditation, the next step in this learning process is to learn how to have a wise, non-reactive awareness, peaceful awareness, towards the experiences of our body. And it turns out that in Buddhism, that your embodied experience, your experience of being in a body, having a body, is extremely important for Buddhist spirituality. It's like the foundation of Buddhist spiritual practice is to be connected to your body, to experience your life through your body, as opposed to have your body be something you lug around or, you know, you direct and, you know, just gets you around to places, but the real life is in the control tower. And so the image for this practice I like is that we want to include all of our practice, but our human life is like a pyramid. And if the pyramid is sitting on its base, it's stable, it's hard to knock over. But if you turn the pyramid upside down and have it standing on its pointed top, chances are it's going to topple over. So we're kind of like that. And the base of our pyramid or mountain or whatever you call it, want to call it, is the body. And one layer up, middle layer, is our emotions. And the higher layer, up near the point to the top, is our thinking. And we put the thinking at the top because it's a little insecure, so it's nice to, you know, it's okay, you can be up there. But if you take your life upside down and live through the world of your thoughts, the pyramid is not stable and you'll fall over a lot. You get caught, you'll get swept away and reactive to all kinds of things. And so to be able to turn the pyramid right side up and really have this solid base, this ballast, to have a foundation, to have this firm base that can be resilient, that cannot get caught so easily by the world and pushed over and knocked over, is part of the value of developing a stronger mindfulness of the body. And so we started that, the first little instruction for that, in that meditation, where I instructed you at some point to let go of your thoughts, don't switch your attention from your thinking, and notice a stronger sensation in your body. And just stay there, let it be there, see if you can let go of the stories you might or commentary you have about it. And just like you never knew it before, or has never been around before, get to know it really for what it is. Let it kind of come in to your experience. So it'd be nice to hear from some of you. What was it like to do that? Did you have any strong sensations? And it didn't have to be the strongest, is what I said. Didn't have to be strong.
I found myself a little bit confused. At the one hand, you've been talking about paying attention to our breath. Then you were talking about paying attention to a sensation in our body. Another time you were talking about paying attention to the distractions. So I'm confused about what I'm supposed to be doing.
Great. Okay. Thank you. So the instruction was to start with the breath, tune into the breath, be with the breathing. And then at some point, because of this exercise, I said, now switch your attention away from the breath and pay attention to the sensations of your body, strongest sensations in your body. That was it. If you got really distracted and lost, and you had a hard time with the exercise of staying with the breath or staying with the body sensations, then it's good. Then part of what the mindfulness practice is to just notice in a very simple way that you're distracted and what those distractions are, what's distracting you, what's making it difficult. And once you've done that, then come back to the focus of attention, which is either the breath, which was the first half, or the second half was, you know, this the sensations in the body. And I'm sorry if it wasn't so clear as I gave the instruction.
So, as a busy working person and mom,
yeah.
I don't sit still very often, hardly ever.
Yeah.
So I found when I was doing throughout the week and today that when I'm doing this practice, it feels really good. But then I find myself feeling guilty for sitting still, and I feel like my mind starts to race on all the things that I should be doing, or that, you know, I'm not really allowed to sit still for this long. And
yeah,
I can imagine. So
what wisdom do you have about that?
What do you mean?
Is this that intuition you have, this thought you have that you're guilty, you should be doing important things, taking care of your family, and you should give in to that the first possible opportunity? Do you have any wisdom about that, or is it
difficult? It's easier to do it here, uh-huh. but like especially at home, yeah. it's just
those thoughts are quite strong. They're compelling.
Yeah, and I did find with this practice, focusing on the body actually helps because uh-huh. the body does. It feels like more of kind of like a base.
Base like the pyramid, right?
Yeah, and so when I concentrate on that, I don't get so caught up in the
perfect. Yeah, that's the idea. So oftentimes when the mind gets caught up easily in its stories and thoughts, it can be really wise just to let go and come back to the breath, come back to the body. And that's basically what I encourage you to do at this point. You can notice what it is if it's really caught up. And then in 2 weeks, we're going to do mindfulness of thinking. So you're a little bit ahead of the curve. But so you can wait 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, we'll talk specifically how to include thinking as part of the meditation. That'll probably help a lot with this kind of thing. But for now, I think it's best just to not give into it. Don't add the commentary, I have to believe it, or don't even... But just if you can put it aside and say, I'll think about that later, and then come back and just come back to the simple experience of breathing and body. And it's a really wise thing to do. Chances are you'll take much better care of your family once you've relaxed and calm than if you went and took care of all the chores. So what I'm curious to know is, when I asked you to focus on the strongest sensations of your body, what happens to some of you as you did that? So right behind you, Hillary.
Can you hear me? Initially, I felt my heart pounding, and I actually experienced that all week and had a really hard time meditating. I actually got myself in a state of anxiety most of the times mm-hmm. I practiced. But with you talking, I could focus on it, but at the same time, be aware of what you're saying.
Uh-huh.
And then I started feeling that my lower back was painful. And then after a while, I just was hearing you and was sort of calm.
Ah, so what it sounds to me it might be happening is that when you're left to your own devices alone with these things, you're telling yourself stories, commentary, ideas, or emotions where you're a little bit reacting. You look like heart beating, I'm worried about it, or back is hurting. I worry about it. This is terrible. And sometimes that makes it contract even more. And maybe there's just enough distraction from your own mind listening to me that you could stay with it and it could relax.
Okay.
Could that be?
Yeah, I was trying really hard at home not to
have
any stories going. Uh-huh. I just kept hearing my heart. And this time, I actually have an easier time focusing on the body than the breath.
Great. So you can, yes.
So the heart or whatever, legs.
Uh-huh. Great, thank you. Yes?
I was having difficulty at first. I felt a drawing in my trouser leg. Yeah. It was too tight, and my attention kept coming back to that. And then when you asked us to focus on the strongest sensation, I just focused on what my knee felt like.
Yeah.
And just kind of endured the... focused on the discomfort I was feeling that I was trying to ignore. Right. And it was easier to do.
It was easier to focus on it than and try to ignore it and endure it. Is that right?
Yeah. I did both successfully, but it was. I mean, it was nice to have a sensation I could focus on. Really.
Great. Thank you.
I felt like I got to a point where of like, was just restlessness. So of course I had the commentary in my mind because I like had the same sensations like, oh, my back is hurting, I'm tired, you know, like I'm hungry and all this. But then I felt like I got to a point where, like, okay, I try to calm my mind down, and then all of a sudden everything started spinning, and so I was just like. Like, I felt like I was, like, leaning to the side, but I was just like, okay, I know I'm sitting still, but everything is, like out of control, but I don't know if that's probably part of the thing, or maybe it's just
it can, it can be part of the unwinding experience. As you're unwinding and settling in from all your day and stuff spinning around, that can definitely happen.
Yeah.
Right. So restlessness is one of those very interesting physical sensations where to sit still... And really focus on the sensations of restlessness. And sometimes I've had a lot of restlessness, and I kind of imagine it's ping pong balls inside of me bouncing around. And just sit there and watch the ping pong balls, watch the restlessness move. And generally, if you do that just carefully and quietly, it tends to quiet down. How many of you found that you brought your attention to a strong sensation or stronger sensation, and as you focused on it, it went away? So quite a few of you. That's a common phenomenon. How many found that you brought your attention to a stronger sensation and it got stronger? That's also a common phenomenon. And how many of you found that you brought your attention to the strong sensation and it just stayed the same? And that's also a common phenomenon. So there's one of three things that can happen. It can get stronger, it can get weaker, or it can stay the same. Your job doing mindfulness is simply to notice how it is. And kind of, as opposed to having an agenda, oh, it's strong and I want it to go away, or it's mild and it's great, I want it to get better and stronger. Any agenda when you meditate just keeps the mind agitated and keeps the mind spinning a little bit. And so what we try to do with mindfulness meditation is to just be present for the simplicity of how it actually is, but to notice how it is. So to feel the body. So the body is as I said earlier, is very important in Buddhist spirituality. It's kind of like our temple that we enter into. It's the base, it's the ballast that supports us. A tremendous amount of our life is mediated through our body. We have a lot of nerves throughout the bodies. We have one Zen teacher I studied with said the body's like an antenna. And it picks up a tremendous amount of information from the environment and from inside of you. There's a lot of processing, a lot of reactivity. Our emotions live in our body. When you get really sensitive to the working of your thoughts, you'll see that your thoughts, it's almost like your thinking mind has tentacles that reach out like you're a puppet and pull on the different muscles and contract them and do different things. And the body is a source of a lot of information about what's going on for us. And The path to liberation in Buddhism, the information you need for that path, a lot of it is found in your body. So I can't underscore how useful it is to come centered, be in your body. For in ordinary life, coming back to your body is a protection from spinning out too much in your mind, being caught up in the endless stories and loops of the mind that go on. Because the body is not a story. The body is just this, what's here. And if we're trying to be more in the present moment, the body is always in the present moment. Your mind might not be. And what we're also trying to do in Buddhism, Buddhist practice, is we're trying to bring the mind and the body together so they're working together in the same place at the same time. And so, you know, if your mind and body are in two different places, generally, the only thing that really works is to bring the mind to the body because that's mind somewhere else, right? The body's here. So the idea is to bring the mind-body in harmony. So when they're working together, when they're in harmony, when they're both included in our awareness, then life becomes much more rich, more multidimensional. It's more difficult to wander off in thought, to get caught in reactivity. There's more information about how we operate, what goes on for us in our life. We can make wiser decisions. The body is very, very helpful. So when we do mindfulness meditation, one of the primary ways in our tradition we focus on the body is that if the body sensation, some sensation in your body, becomes stronger, more predominant, or more compelling than your breathing, at that point we let go of the breathing and stop, let go of the focus on the breathing, and instead bring the attention to that particular sensation in the body, that place, that area in your body where those sensations are. And then just focus on that. And what you're doing then is cultivating mindful present moment awareness by staying in that location in your body. Same with the breath. The mind might wander off into thought. And then you notice that you begin again with that place in your body where that sensation is. So if your knee hurts, for example, then you would feel the sensations of the knee. Mind might wander away. You come back and feel the sensations in the knee. And to really kind of rest the attention in the knee, really feel it there, kind of like you've never felt a knee before and you're curious. You're like an anthropologist from Mars. And somehow you've managed to enter a human body and you're just super curious. What's this like? But in very quiet way, without thinking about it, but like feeling your way, sensing your way, and feeling what's there. And then trying to put aside any impulse of being for and against it. Try to keep it just really simple. And you might get reactive to it, that's okay. But the movement is to go in the direction of being non-reactive. Just, it's okay, just let it be there. And then at some point, if that compelling, strong sensation is no longer strong, then to let go of, stop focusing there and bring the attention back to the breathing. Then a few moments later, a few minutes later, there might be a nice, warm, buzzing feeling in your chest or in your forehead or someplace. And then you would let go of breathing and you'd focus on that buzzy, nice feeling. And let that be there. And then when that goes away or is no longer compelling, you go back to the breathing. Make sense? And what happens over time, and this is we're talking about months or years, is that it's actually very useful to bring attention to different parts of the body, because the body stores or has, or has a lot of our life is in our body. And over time, your body will, in different ways, will show different parts of itself to you, different will come alive or speak, and as you bring them into the focus of attention, you start becoming integrated, you start becoming whole. They all start becoming fitting together, the puzzle pieces kind of thing, until you have a kind of more holistic or full embodied sense of being present. To really be centered in your body, be here. One of the things that's epidemic, and especially I think in our corners of society, is a lot of people have professions and that keep them very much in their head and not so much in their body. And I think, you know, the more and more screen time that people use also is less and less being connected to the world through their body, but, you know, through sight and sound and all that. And so we have a tremendous reinforcement of being in the head, being in the intellect, in the mind, and thinking a lot. And it's we lose touch with ourselves. I mean, it's the language of being in touch, right, is physical. And so our life becomes much, much richer when we learn how to be in touch with our life through our bodies. So over time, the body will speak to you, in the sense that different sensations will arise and be compelling, will be strong. And then you want to include those as the meditation, and that becomes part of the integration. Slowly, things become whole. And over some time, you'll start feeling yourself much more present in your body, be able to rest in your body, kind of a ballast in your body. You won't be pushed around so much. You won't get caught up in your thoughts so much of what's going on. And we can just wait. I'm delighted in some of these sounds. So because the mind is so flighty, so easy it goes into its thinking, one of the tools, just like with breathing, we might say in, out, we call it a mental note. Sometimes it's useful then to use a mental note to stay, help you stay present for the sensation in your body you're feeling. So if it's the knee pain, you might just say knee, or pain, or pulling, or tightness, or something. Just say it a few times. Just every once in a while, just say it gently. Just a way of saying, I see you, I'm acknowledging you, I'm staying right there. Be there. And then if it's, you know, if it's buzzing someplace, just note buzzing. Some people find that this is very helpful because, at least over time, is because as you're meditating, trying to stay with your breath, actually what's screaming is some sensation in your body. And if you're struggling, trying to stay with your breath and some strong sensation elsewhere is calling for attention, then you set up this tension, this conflict. But by letting go of the breath and bringing attention to the strong sensation in the body, there's no tension, no conflict. It's the thing that's calling for attention is what gets the attention. Make sense? So any questions about what I said?
We can close our eyes to help us concentrate on our interior, but we can't close our ears.
Right.
Is there any reason not to attempt, like with earplugs or time of day, to limit what we hear?
Generally, the advice is not to do that, unless you have some kind of heightened sensitivity issue or something. But, you know, it's kind of pretty natural thing to close the eyes. And there's many situations, a number of situations in life where we close our eyes naturally to really kind of be present for something in a fuller way, like listening to a very subtle sound you might close your eyes to hear. Sometimes if you really want to feel the lips of your lover, it's pretty common to close your eyes. You know, if you keep your eyes open during that time, you know, it's like a little odd. They open your eyes and you're staring at them. You know, it's a kind of a natural thing to close the eyes. It's not a natural thing to plug the ears. It's kind of artificial. And it's not really needed. We treat sound the same way as we treat body sensation. If there's a loud sound that comes and that's compelling, then we don't fight it, but we'd rather just let go of the breathing and do listening meditation for a while. The neighbor's dog is barking, and rather than seeing it as a distraction, seeing it as a problem, having a conflict with it, it's just now you get to do barking meditation. And you can say the word listening. And part of what we're training ourselves to do is not to make things a problem, not to be in conflict with what goes on, but to learn how to receive it and hold it in awareness in a relaxed way. And also, as you do that and learn to do that, you can actually learn to get calmer and more concentrated and present for whatever your experience is. The barking doesn't have to be a problem, it can actually help you. So here's a nice story. So I studied in Burma with one of the great Burmese meditation teachers he's still alive, for the last 50 years. And he was kind of like he's an old man now, but he was kind of a bulldog kind of guy. He was kind of like a soldier type guy or a boxer kind of guy, strong and tough and big. And he was a little bit intimidating, you know, he would raise his, you know, we would go talk to him about our practice, and sometimes he'd raise his eyebrow, and you know, he's like, "Oh, I better practice harder." And anyway, so he told a story of when he was a new student, when he was first starting to meditate, and he was given this instruction that I just gave you: you focus on your breath, and then if something else occurs that's more predominant, you bring your attention to it and stay with it, and. So he had a roommate, and his roommate, he said, was basically a lazy kind of person who wasn't, you know, so motivated, and he is like this bulldog kind of warrior guy, and so the lazy roommate would go to bed early and go to sleep early, and he would sit up in bed meditating late, you know, for a serious guy. But his roommate snored. So for a while, he was indignant and upset and all that. And finally, he said, I just made the snoring the subject of my meditation. And that was his doorway into deep states of concentration. That's what kind of, rather than being a problem, it was actually what got him into meditation deeply. So this is the art to learn, and so we'll learn this as we go through these weeks. The art is to learn not to make anything a problem, but to make it a useful place to cultivate awareness, to cultivate stability of mind, to cultivate an open, relaxed presence. It's a wonderful thing to learn. Any one more question? I want to do another meditation, so maybe it's two of you. Yeah.
You spoke briefly about the relationship between pain and the breath.
Yes.
And how they distract each other. I missed that somehow.
Oh, okay. So you might be sitting, meditating on the breathing and having a grand old time with your breath. And then suddenly, or not so suddenly, after a while, someplace in your body begins to ache. As that ache gets stronger, it commands more attention, right? But if you think you're trying to, if the instruction was to stay with the breath at all costs, then there starts being a conflict between those two. And in this meditation here, there's no need for conflict. At that point, you just let go of the breath and focus completely on that knee or the place where. Make sense? So with the person behind you, then we'll do the meditation.
So when I have been practicing at home, I find the breath is just too easy and obvious. And when I focus on the breathing, I can do that and think about all sorts of other things at the same time. And I'm constantly having to try and pull myself back. And I found it easier to think about my heartbeat, which is actually almost imperceptible. But it's so hard for me to notice it that it takes
more attention,
all my focus, and then I don't have room for the other things.
Right. So that's fine. The usual instruction in this situation is a couple of things to say. One is some people find that using the mental notes gives the thinking mind something to do, so you're less likely to wander off in thought. So in, out, or something. The other thing is that develop a much more refined attention on the breathing. So start tuning in to the in-breath. And it's possible to be aware of how the sensations change from the beginning of the in-breath to the end of the out-breath. And what happens when things switch from the in-breath to the out-breath. And then from the beginning of the out-breath, how does things change from the beginning of the out-breath to the end of the out-breath? And what's it like to switch from the out-breath to the in-breath? So you develop real continuity where you stay. You know, many years ago when I was young, I took a massage class. And one of the instructions in massage that I was taught back then was you always want to keep one hand on the person you're massaging. So if you had to get more oil or something, you'd keep one hand on the person and you get the oil and, you know, do your thing. But you always want to be in touch with them. So the same principle with the breathing. You always want to have one hand on your breathing. So you're there continuously through the whole thing. Rather than massaging someone in staccato fashion, but you're massaging the whole length of your in-breath, the whole length of your out-breath, and you're really riding it all the way out. So for you, if you get more tune in, more refined, and it gets more and more subtle, and if you do that, the breath gets more and more subtle, and then you get the benefits of like the same thing you got from the heartbeat. Does that sound like something you want to try? Okay. So I want to do another meditation, and it's kind of a little exercise that will kind of try to illustrate what I'm trying to say here. And you're welcome to stand for 30 seconds, stretch your legs, and taking a comfortable upright posture, gently closing your eyes, and then settling in, maybe going through the simple settling in procedures. Take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Maybe relax as you exhale. Letting your breath return to normal. And scanning through your body to see if there's some obvious places that you can relax or soften. So I'm going to guide you through an exercise which will maybe give you a sense of what it's like to do mindfulness of the body as you bring attention to different parts of your body. And this is, in a relaxed way, bring your attention into your right hand. And feel the sensations of your right hand. The back of the hand, the palm of the hand, the fingers. And as you feel your right hand, you might feel a variety of sensations. You might feel tingling, pulsing, the air temperature on your hand, the blowing of the air conditioner. Parts of your hand maybe are warm, parts are cool. Maybe you feel the weight of your hand or the hardness or softness in the hand. Just very in a relaxed way. Don't try to force it. Kind of resting attention in your hand, you might notice that you become aware of a lot more sensations in your hand than you would have been if you had just ignored it, not paid any attention there. It kind of comes alive with sensations. And then I'm going to ask you to switch your attention to another part of the body, but now experiment with moving your attention to this new place in a relaxed and deliberate way, calm and deliberate. So experiment with moving your attention calmly and deliberately to your left hand. And feel the sensations of your left hand. Sensations have permission to be there. Just open to receive, to sense, to feel the fullness of that part of your body. Letting your attention roam around that area of your hand, noticing the different sensations that are there, the left hand. I'm going to ask you to switch your attention again and experiment with having your attention move calmly in a relaxed way, but deliberately. See if you can notice what the strongest sensation is in your body, and then calmly and deliberately let the attention move into that area. Not necessarily focusing directly on the strong sensation, but in the area where it is, in the same way that you're aware of the hand, let that area of your body become alive with whatever sensations are there. Not making a story of it or judgments about it, just as if it's completely okay for those sensations to be there. And you're just letting that part of your body show itself to you. become richer in sensations. And then calmly and deliberately bring your attention to that part of your body where you have been feeling your breathing. And when you focus on your breathing, notice that part of your body, but in the same way that you felt the hand, just feel that area of your body. And let the sensations of that area, including that of breathing, show themselves to you. Stay with your breathing the best you can, coming back to the breathing whenever your mind wanders off. But if some strong or compelling sensation in your body arises, then the same way that you brought your attention to the hand, calmly and deliberately, bring your attention to that part of your body where the strong sensation is. And just be there, feel it. As long as it's compelling. And when it's no longer compelling, you begin again with your breathing. If it helps you to stay present in a relaxed way, you can use this mental notes in, out for breathing or something for the sensations. And we'll do this for another minute here. And see if you can give yourself over completely to the experience, avoiding getting involved in your thoughts. Very quiet in your thoughts, like you're listening to a sound far away. Get quiet in your thoughts so you can really feel your breathing or feel your body. can take a couple of deep breaths. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. It's possible to keep the meditation really simple and just stay with the breathing. And if the mind wanders off, come back. And that's a great training because we're training the mind to stay present rather than have free rein to think whatever it wants. Rather than being, often the mind has free rein to think, it often pulls us along and we lose ourselves in all that world of thinking. And that world of thinking is often the world where our reactivity, our judgments, our fantasies, our interpretations of event kind of pull us away from what's really happening. So to train ourselves not to get caught, not to get lost, not to feed that as part of what we're trying to do. And it's very powerful just to come back to the breath, come back to the breath, let go, come back, let go, come back. If that's all you did, it'd be time well spent. But we're trying to do something more than here. We're trying to cultivate and develop an ability to be present, to be attentive to the full range of our life. And our physical experience is a very important part of our life. And you'll find that your life much richer in many, many dimensions if you're connected to your body. And so the way we develop it in this practice here, that heightened mindfulness of the body, is when the body sensations get stronger and more compelling than our ability to stay with the breath, then you can just stop focusing on the breath and just bring your attention calmly and deliberately to feel that part of your body where those strong sensations are. And one argument that can arise in your mind or a protest is, this is too mundane, this can't be spiritual, this can't be important, you know, my itch. But what's important about this, something as silly as an itch, is that you're training your mind to be present for something. And you're beginning to take I don't want to use the word control, you're beginning to take kind of ownership of your attention so that your mind doesn't kind of pull your attention this way and that way into whatever thoughts and stories you have, but you have some ability to choose what you pay attention to. And this is very helpful, and you'll see when we start talking about thoughts and emotions, because if you let your thoughts and emotions command your attention, then you'll see the world through the filter of those thoughts and those moods. But if you start taking ownership of your attention and have some ability to choose where your attention goes, then you're going to start not being so unduly influenced by the moods and stories and interpretations that the mind creates. And so something as simple as coming back to the itch is a very powerful training in freeing the mind of its thoughts, learning to keep focused, and learning not to be reactive to whatever is going on, not before and against it. Just be present, very simple. So I hope that made sense. Do you have any questions about what I've said this evening at this point? Yes.
What you said, but it's about it's not about what you described, but it is about what you said. The deeper breaths at the beginning and the end, what is the purpose of those breaths?
Oh, the deeper breaths at the beginning is just to somehow let go of the concerns and busyness of the day and lack of connection, and really as a reminder, as a little ritual almost, come here, be connected here, be in this time and place. Breathing in deeply, you feel the body, you remind you to be here, be rooted in body. And then as you breathe out, it's a kind of time to just let go of the tensions of the day. That's kind of what I think is nice to do. At the end, it's nice to do because sometimes people feel, if sometimes people feel very calm, their body kind of begins to feel kind of different than it usually feels. And so to take some deep breaths there, it kind of reawakens the body or the connection in a way that you're kind of ready to start start up. So did all my instructions all make sense to you? Yeah, that was easy. I hope that's the case, though. And yes, you want to ask, please.
I just wonder, is there ever an experience for you meditating that's heightened by guidance from somebody else? I mean, is that something we'll outgrow as we deepen our meditation? It's always, when it's guided like this, it's always much more complete for me than I can do by myself. But yeah, I'm just wondering.
Yeah, some people find it a lot easier to do meditation if it's guided by someone because, you know, the variety of reasons. One is that you're being distracted from yourself. and so you're keeping you on track and you're there. And sometimes it's a little bit compelling, kind of the interesting to follow along, and a variety of reasons. The goal is to not require it. The goal is to come to a place where we become self-reliant and become independent from needing any kind of support from the outside in order to get calm and centered and have clear seeing and insight. And if you always rely on a guided meditation, you'll never learn that independence and that self-reliance. But as an interim process, it can be fine. Some people get guided meditations. We have some on our website even. As it kind of gets started, warmed up. And here I do it because I find it just an effective way to give the instructions and give people a sense of what's going on and then to have them go home and try it out on their own. And for some people, you know, it's a lot harder to do it at home. The fact that it's harder to do it at home is not a mistake. And it doesn't mean that you're a lousy meditator. The idea is to be really simple with our interpretations. No commentary, right? And the simplest commentary, one simple commentary is, oh, it's harder at home. That's the way it is. So let's just do it this way. And who knows what's, you know, maybe that's the most important lesson you're going to learn, is how to learn patience with how hard it is at home. In fact, it's a very common teaching in the meditation circles that the first lesson you need to learn is patience. Meditation takes a lot of patience. And if you don't have time to become patient, then probably meditation is not for you. Yeah, I'm going to be patient now. So there is this handout it has the instruction, kind of reviews the instructions, and it's hopefully in a simple way. You can read it again. Sometimes it's nice to read the instructions a number of times through the week to be reminded and kind of sink in. And then in the back page, there's some little bit how to apply it to your daily life. Because mindfulness is not only about meditation, but it's about how you do it in your daily life. And then to add 5 minutes to your week daily meditation. And and then, as I said last week, if it's not simple, it's not mindfulness. So if you find yourself getting, what were the instructions? They were so complicated, what I'm trying to do here and all that, then you probably lost it anyway. Just come back to your breathing. Any time you're confused about what's going on, it's not worth being confused. Just come back to your breathing. Just make it keep it really simple. And then at some point, as you stay with your breath, it becomes kind of obvious that your knee hurts. If not obvious, stay with the breath. You don't have to figure out, where should I be? Just stay with the breath. But it's good to kind of during this week, is to make your body a theme of attention. As you go about your day, at work, at home, wherever you are, see if you can start noticing more what's happening in your body. What's it like if you come back into your body? What's it like? Like, for example, many years ago, when I was a graduate student, I went over to the library and the database said that the book, the very obscure book I needed, was not checked out. But it was not on the shelves. And So I was trying to get the attention of a librarian to kind of look for the book, or maybe someone had returned it recently or something, and they were being uncooperative, and I was trying to convince, you know, it's an really important book for me to have, and so we were kind of in it. I was with it, you know, kind of having this intense conversation, And finally, they agreed to go in the back room to look for it. And only then did I notice, pay attention to my body. And then I noticed my body was three-quarters of the way over the counter, leaning over it. And I think it would have been good if I had checked into my body earlier than that and knew what was good. So, you know, the body has a lot of information. So there's a lot of usefulness to come into your body, notice what's going on, notice your posture in different situations. Posture is a lot, very important part of our life. What posture do you have? And make it during this week, make it a habit. Come back, maybe make a sticky note on your iPhone or something, your smartphone, your phone, saying body. And every time you see that, you check in. What's going on with this body? What's happening here? And the more, so the reason for this is the more you're aware of your body, the more you're familiar with the body, know how to tune into the body, the easier it's going to be to work with emotions, to be mindful of emotions. And the more you're aware of your body and your emotions, the easier it is to work with your thoughts. So remember the pyramid? So actually you want to have this good foundation, and then you can have a really wise attention to thinking if you include all the rest. But if you're only trying to pay attention to thoughts, and that's all you're aware of, it's not going to be very stable. So the body. So there are some, as last week, there's a number of people here who are happy to talk with you if you have questions. There's they've had a lot of meditation experience. There's people, so the people who are in the Dharma mentoring program, why don't you stand so you can see, they can see who you are. So see, you can look around and see near you who they are, and you're welcome to go and talk to them and ask questions about this or anything about meditation or about the IMC being here. And or you can come and ask me too. And Richard too, sitting by the signboard. He's being shy today, but he has a lot of experience too. And thank you for this evening, and come back next week for emotions.